everybody, and welcome back to Feeling Seen, the podcast that talks about the movies that make us feel seen. My co-host today is something of a polymath. She is a filmmaker, she is a writer-director. You could have possibly seen her film Slash Back, making its way around festivals. If you've heard of the company Mixtape VR, she is the founder, and I believe the CEO of that. She is also the creator of the comic Snowguard. Nyla Inukshuk, what else do the people need to know about you before we get started? That's quite the resume selection we have from you.
Oh gosh, thank you. I think that pretty much sums up my nerdiness in a neat way. And a good way to start, for sure.
Well, Slashback. Tell me about your co-writer on Slashback and how you guys came to collaborate on this story about your film. It's about a group of teen girls living in a northern Alaska town they refer to lovingly and not so lovingly sometimes as Pang. And Pang is infiltrated at a certain point by extraterrestrials. And this becomes a, like, girls versus the world adventure movie, kicking ass. This is like bad taste up in the wilds of Alaska. And at a halfway point, when there was like a zombified guy chasing a little girl, I was like, this is like Peter Jackson chasing himself in bad taste. And I was really, really, I was charmed by the whole thing. But that meme was like, look at that. You just get up there and you make your fucking movie and you bootstrap it. I'm not saying you thought about that, but I thought about that. But tell me a bit how this came to be, how you found this collaborator and told this story.
Yeah, and it really was this kind of like bootstrapping effort to the end. It's been this crazy ride, and Ryan Cavan, my co-writer, and I, we still are working together on, and we've got a bunch of projects that we're always thinking about and talking about. And so it's been, you know, this kind of crazy journey with this project. And so I had this, but it's also the project that brought us together, which is so great. Mm-hmm. For me, I have this idea of teenage girls up in this one of these remote communities in the Arctic taking on an alien invasion. That was just this kind of idea that had been just percolating in my head for a long time. Really, it's, yes. I don't even know exactly when it kind of started, but I knew that it was just like a fun idea. I myself am from one of these tiny remote communities that are accessible only by plane and that are really small. Pang has a population of about 1,500 people. It's stunningly beautiful, especially in the summertime, which is when we got to make the movie. And so when, because this was the first thing I directed ever, it was, and I knew that I would be having, in order to make it, I would have to be getting these great Inuk girls who could make the movie with me. And that to kind of, that would be a bit of a hard sell to kind of get this project off the ground without, you know, these stars that we could attach. Or
was the desire, or like kind of the mandate, always like, it's going to be local talent? Like, these are the kind of actors that I need for this, and I don't know where that casting net's going to take me. It's got to be people from this area.
Well, I just knew it had to be Inuit, because I'm Inuk, yeah. and this place, the movie takes place in a community where my sister-in-law is from, and she didn't learn how to speak English until she was like 14. So it was, for the movie to make sense in one of these places, that it had to have an Inuk cast, and most Inuit live in Nunavut. And so out of convenience, really, because my parents lived in Iqaluit, which is the capital city of Nunavut, and in itself is like, I think, 8,000 people or something. It's not this big. Yeah. And because my parents lived there, and when I was developing the project, had really no money and was trying to find some funds to make this short proof of concept for the movie, I was just casting out really just where my parents lived. And I found these young people in Iqaluit that at first were just interested in coming to these acting workshops that I held, mm-hmm. alongside this local theater actor, Christine Tutu. And so we had these workshops, and I had these pages from this short script that I had written. And that's kind of how we found a lot of the girls, and a lot of the girls that still are, you know, working with me on this project. And so it's been so great to see them kind of grow up with it. And then at one point, you know, we all had, we, at when, it does feel kind of special that it started with this, like, really just this belief in this, that we could make this kind of bonkers movie.
When you had nothing else, all you had was your belief. You had your belief in your idea, and that is what fucking got you here.
Yeah, and it was kind of like, now that I've made a movie, I'm like, oh, that's what it is. It's like, it's so insane to me that this was the one that we chose to make. But it was, I mean, it was also an opportunity to learn every single lesson the hard way. And
it feels like an ideal first movie in that way, because like, it's one of those movies where like, they tell you, like, speaking with some folks who made Everything Everywhere All at Once, like Ki Hui Kwan was saying, like, the Daniels made the exact movie that they tell you never to make. Like, this is everything about this movie is don't do this.
Yeah.
And then this movie, it's like, listen, I've never done this before. We should do this. When probably, maybe if you had like a three more things under your belt, it would be like, I'm a little inhibited by my logistical awareness of all the challenges that this was going to be. But first film, you're like, yeah, we'll figure this out.
And you got to learn this somehow. You know, yep. And even with the cast, and I think it's so sweet. We were just traveling with the movie to Spain, to the Sitges Film Festival there, which was so great. And
I have heard such wonderful things about Sitges. What an amazing experience for like a group of teen girls to get to go to Sitges to do this together.
To get to go to Europe, but then also the audiences there are just like love horror. And so it's like anytime there was blood or a death, they're just like, and so the girls just loved it. Yeah, it was so much fun. And I think that, you know, just because you're kind of separated from that, you know that the movie's out there and people are watching it, but you're just kind of trusting that that's happening. So to kind of be connected and see audiences responding is kind of great. So then when we started getting support to get this project going, I knew that I really wanted to find a co-writer that was really strong at understanding structure and story. And Ryan I don't think he'd had a feature movie made before, but I read some of his scripts and loved them. They were weird and awesome and cool and scary. And so we met and got along. Somehow we still don't really know why we get along.
Creative partnerships, man. It's not ours to wonder why.
And so we spent some time up in Nunavut with the girls. We went out boating. We went to cabins and would just like have these therapy sessions at night and then write in the morning. It was for me, like this script and also other projects that we're working on and scripts that we've written, it's just this, like, it is such a therapeutic process to kind of, you know, and especially to kind of go back and sit and think about myself as a teenager and how you kind of start to build this identity. And for me, it was kind of fun because for me, a big part of my identity as a teenager was movies and scary movies. And my love
same.
Of horror.
So relatable. We're the same.
And so just to be able to kind of then also see these girls at the same age and who are just figuring out who they are and where their indigeneity fits into that. And then just seeing them kind of grow up and now they're, you know, Knowledge also plays Ufi is 14 and the rest are 17. And kind of just finishing up high school and thinking about the next things. So it's so great.
Well, that is, I'm glad you gave me that sweep because I like how this segues into the character and the movie that we're going to discuss in addition to your own work, which is, I love it when I get the answer and it makes me like lean back to my chair a little bit. I'm like, all right, where are we going to go with this?
Yeah.
And
I realized this, I was talking to a couple of friends of mine yesterday and I was mentioning at lunch, I was like, oh yeah, so this podcast, it seems kind of cool. I've got to think of this idea of a character that makes you feel seen. And they were asking my choice. And I just said it to them and they were just like, everyone burst out laughing, including myself. Like, what have I done? But when I kind of explained myself a little, they're like, okay, we get it.
Keep thy covenant, young Baron.
And if God smiles on thee, then hurry thee back. Thy seat beside us waits.
Are you really going to go?
Should I?
I like your head better where it is.
I gave my word. I made a covenant.
This is how silly men perish.
While brave men become great.
Why greatness? Why is goodness not enough?
Okay, so Dev Patel's Gawain from The Green Knight, was this the, I talked to the guest about this recently, was this the, like, I really thought about it choice, or was this the gut choice that you went with?
I was thinking about it. I thought it was a really fun kind of thing to think about, and but then I kind of was like, oh yeah, you still gotta think of that idea, and I was like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And no, I was
like, you know, there were some choices where I was like, oh yeah, it kind of seems like that would make more sense or something, but then I was also just, you know, when I think about movies and the impact that they can have, there mm-hmm. are some movies that just make you like feel something, you know, mm-hmm. and just that impact you and realize that they just are touching on something that really connects with you. And I find that with David Lowery's movies, there's mm-hmm. always this moment where it's this like gut punch to me. And mm-hmm. I think that maybe some of the things that we may have kind of are wrestling with or just spend time thinking about. And I think the interesting thing about making movies and writing movies is that you do spend a lot of time just like thinking about ideas and processing mm-hmm. ideas. And so when watching his movies, I'm kind of like, oh, I think that we've spent a bit of time thinking about some of the same stuff.
Well, it's, you know, with Gawain and with Lowery's work, with you see in like A Ghost Story and then in The Green Knight and then in this too, I think a through line of the two of those is there's a melancholy about those films. And I've read you discuss like you grew up loving like adventure movies. I've read you mention like E.T. and Indiana Jones and like sort of kid adventure movies too. And I wondered what it was about the sort of like downward pitch of that tone in a Lowery movie, taking those sort of fantastical aspects too, that really like super spoke to you.
Yeah, I also just love fantasy and grew up with mm-hmm. like loving fantasy fiction and just this idea of magic existing mm-hmm. in this like other layer. And I loved King Arthur stories and mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. And witches and witchcraft.
I hope you saw The Northman earlier this year, because I think that movie did those things
so
extremely
great.
Well,
yeah. Too.
It was like the beat down version of The Green Knight.
Oh my gosh. Also so much trauma. But you know, I do think about how now it's kind of, as I'm continuing to work and try and get better as a director, I'm always thinking, okay, like how can we make people feel something with what the tools that we've got, which is basically mm-hmm. what you can see and what you can hear. And both mm-hmm. those movies are such great and directors are such great examples of being able to do that so well and just like really kind of making you feel something. And even if it's violence and fear. And I think that sometimes it's, you know, those kind of processing, those kinds of things are really interesting. And with this movie and with A Ghost Story also, just A Ghost Story I had to actually watch in batches. I like watched the first 20 minutes and being like, oh, this is amazing. And then I just was like, oh, I'm going to be doing this? I like, I've got to be like more emotionally prepared, like get my tea, do my, like have my laundry already done, like get the any anxieties out the window, because I got to be in a safe space for this. Because for me, and actually even just the process of making Slashback, which was just this kind of crazy process, and mm-hmm. and making movies is so challenging and hard. I actually started the process of pitching this movie as a writer and producer only. So I was going to be actually trying to find someone else to be directing this movie that I just really believed in, and this story that I loved, in this place that I loved. And I was, you know, at one point there was another director who was a really nice Haluna white guy. That means white person.
Thank you. Great knowledge.
And he was, but he'd also never directed a movie before. So like it was kind
Those people get these jobs all the time. They give those guys rings of power.
And it was this kind of crazy thing where I was just getting ready to pitch the movie. And as the writer and producer, and I found out from my doctors that, well, I knew I was really sick for a long time, but I found out from my doctors that I was very, very sick.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. It was really hard, but it's also just kind of something I'm so grateful for. But I found out like the month I was going to pitch that I had a 50-50 chance of surviving the month. And that I was really, really sick. And it's the kind of news that makes you, and for me, I kind of always put a lot of pressure on myself and was ambitious and had all of these kinds of, and I worked in VR and technology and this idea that you can like, oh, you can be the first to do this thing. And then all of a sudden with this news, I was like, oh, wait, you're telling me like all of that doesn't matter. It's like, it was this, and I know that not everyone can take like traumatic news like that this way, but it was
we all cope how we need to cope. And you were like, I'm going to cope by making this movie.
Well, it was just like kind of this overwhelming sense of joy that like, oh, nothing, not, all of these things that I thought were really important doesn't really matter. But then also I was like pissed off. I was pissed off that I hadn't made a movie yet, which sounds kind of crazy.
Yeah, I love it.
And that also I'm here pitching this movie and it's like, but this is my, like, if I'm going to do this, like, what am I doing? Like, then, you know, thank goodness I was able to, I got a liver transplant. I was able to get better.
Congratulations. Oh my God. I'm so happy you're here.
Thank you. And, but it was really this kind of like this adrenaline from that. 4 months later, we shot this little proof of concept that I was talking about and doing this casting. And then we kind of, it was just like this race to kind of do this thing. And I was kind of getting better and recovering as I'm kind of doing this crazy kind of thing. And then to watch, then just like sit down and watch one of David Lowery's movies and go, and to just have these characters who are having to kind of process death.
Yeah.
And for both of them, I mean, I think with the Green Knight also, just like that initial line of King Arthur asking him, like, tell me a story about yourself that tells me who you are. And that was like the first of a couple moments in that movie where I was like, oh my gosh.
So, before we make merry, you make for me a gift. You tell me a tale of yourself so that I might know thee.
None to tell, King.
Yet. You have none to tell yet.
Yes.
Because it was that feeling almost that when I was really sick, like I was like, oh, but I don't have any stories yet. Like I don't have any, I had spent a lot of my time like as a supporting other people making their stuff. And it was like actually the scariest thing was actually saying, oh, I want to do that thing that, you know.
I like how you're like, the scariest thing was saying, I want to do that. And you were given a 50-50 chance at living. But the scariest thing was being like, I'm going to tell my story.
Yeah.
Because here it is.
But it does, like, after when you survive something like that, that is really, really challenging and pushes you in different ways. When it's like, oh, I've got to make a movie. Yeah, this is going to be really, really hard. But I do hard stuff.
I do hard stuff. I'm dope and I do dope shit.
So it was kind of and a reframing for me that I had to be focusing on things that I was really passionate about. Like if I'm going to be, because I loved work, I love making movies, I love all this stuff. But it's like, if I'm going to be doing this stuff, it has to be something that I'm like really into and that I can be believing in. And I need to be focusing a bit on some of my own things. Mm-hmm. And so really within that switch, I mean, I think like even when I was younger, maybe kind of feeling guilty about not like making more important movies or
you know. Never feel that.
But I think, you know, I love that this movie got to kind of, in the process, kind of be looking and reflecting on these movies that I grew up loving, and that it was just this, like, you know, just this amazing process just for both myself and then these teenage cast, and we were kind of all growing up the whole time.
Surely there is one amongst us here who will meet this night on his terms.
I will do it. I will meet him. I will meet thee.
You understand this challenge?
I do. I think I do.
Remember, it is only a game.
I feel like you got a quest. Like, you got a quest.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, I'm like looking at my questions and your movie and The Green Knight and like looking for the metaphors, and like, but you literally just like, you got your quest papers handed to you, and like, so did Gawain, and Gawain was like, I'm going on my quest.
Yeah.
And you were the knight wandering through the countryside being like, I'll figure it out, I guess. I've never been outside those walls, really, but, like, I'm going to figure this out.
Yeah, and that, you know, I think that it is, to start living, you have to go and do some tough stuff, and that you won't always look like a hero in it. and that also, you know, that facing death and the inevitability of death isn't so crazy. And the fear of death, that and like the concern about that, and like, it's, it could actually keep you from living.
You must seek him out.
And if death awaits me?
Oh, I do not know of any man who has not marched up to greet death before his time.
Why hold me to this light?
Is it wrong to want greatness for you?
I fear I'm not meant for greatness.
You know what I think? You know what I think you would have done that Gawain didn't? Because Gawain was, I think you would have ridden on the shoulder of a giant. I think if you were in the story of the Green Knight and you had those giants walking by you, I watched this movie, I was like, oh my God, a giant's going to pick him up and he's going to be going with a giant. And he didn't. And I was like, how did you not ride the giant? And I feel like you would have said yes to that bold decision. I'm giving you that credit right now, riding the giant.
That's so sweet. Thank you.
the least I could say. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with Nyla Inukshuk in a minute. Then I'll have one quick thing before I go about a very talented filmmaker who recently passed away far too soon, Jeff Barnaby. We're going to give a shout out to Jeff Barnaby. So stick around.
I'm Jesse Thorne. On the next Bullseye, our annual Halloween Spectacular. We'll interview Anna Fabrega from Los Espookies, Monet Exchange from Drag Race, and the great R.L. Stine, creator of Goosebumps.
You know, I don't really get too deep into the real fears. It's a lot safer to do a dummy coming to life.
That's on the next Bullseye for MaximumFun.org and NPR. Hi, I'm Jesse Thorne, the founder of Maximum Fun, and I have a special announcement. I'm no longer embarrassed by my brother, and me. You know, for years, each new episode of this supposed advice show was a fresh insult, a depraved jumble of erection jokes, ghost humor, and frankly, this is for the best, very little actionable advice. But now, as they enter their twilight years, I'm as surprised as anyone to admit that it's gotten kind of good. Justin, Travis, and Griffin's witticisms are more refined, like a humor column in a fancy magazine. And they hardly ever say Bazinga anymore. So, after you've completely finished listening to every single one of all of our other shows, why not join the McElroy Brothers every week for My Brother, My Brother, and Me?
Welcome back to Feeling Seen. My co-host today is Nyla Inukshuk. Her debut feature, Slash Back, stars real teenage girls from the Canadian Arctic gearing up and fighting alien invaders. The character she brought with her is Gawain from The Green Knight, as played by Dev Patel in David Lowery's melancholy quest film. So let's get back into it. What I was really having fun thinking about in the context of watching Slashback, I love this little cast so much. I might go with their little backwards hat on. I wanted to just like sweep them all up and like take them to a concert and buy them dinner. And these teens. And it was watching how this little group of girls sort of exists in tension with the tradition of their culture and their heritage and sitting at this sort of intersection of the modernity that they inhabit. And one of the girls being, I loved it. She was like, I love our town. It's awesome here. And she was kind of excited about and sort of invested in lore of her people. Whereas it's like you and your baby stories, like you're super annoying. And with the emphasis in Green Knight on like, tell me a story that lets me know who you are. And these girls who come from such an incredible tradition of story. And then you coming into this being like, I don't have stories to tell. I'm going to, and I've had this one living with me in my head for so long in my life. I wanted to hear about the role of story in your life sort of growing up and then how that, you know, clearly led you to the path of telling your own on screen and like sort of figuring it out in the hardest way possible.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think that stories are so important and for me, I loved horror movies and my mom also loved horror movies. And so she kind of introduced me to Hitchcock when I was really young. Mm. And I grew up at a time when great horror movies were being made. And some really bad movies that I loved a lot were being made.
And hey, that's a whole lifestyle for me. You don't have to sell me on that.
And yeah, it was really great working with the teenage cast actually and hearing, because for me also growing up, I was trying to figure out where my indigeneity fit in. I'm mixed race. I am Inuk on my father's side. My mother is settler Canadian. Mm-hmm. And so it was this kind of trying to figure out how that worked and processing shame I might have in my indigeneity. And then working with these teenage girls and then seeing the ways in which shame might come through in the language or the way they kind of spoke about themselves. Mm. And we'd have lots of conversations about it. We would talk about if they said, oh, that's so Inuk, and they would mean it in this negative way. I'm saying, what do you mean by that? And then they're like, you know, we kind of talk it through.
It feels like it could almost be like inner child therapy. Like you're, it's like,
oh my gosh.
I am an adult looking at like my young avatars being like, we're the same, we're different.
You know, it's really helpful. And even to the point where it's like, oh, we've got to go and do like, get our photos taken before this screening or something. It's something I would never, ever want to do or be terrified at. But it's like, oh, I've got to go and do it to show the girls that it's not so crazy. And yeah. It's like, they're helping me out. But then also it's, and I'm like telling them, like, people will ask about like being role models and stuff. I'm like, you guys don't have to be role models. Don't worry about it. Like you can be mess ups and still be great. And, you know,
yes.
And then I'm like also being like, well, yeah, it's like good for myself too. Like,
you know? that was a good point. I'm all about that one. I'm going to live that.
And so, I mean, I don't have kids. I don't plan on having kids, but I feel like a bit of that, like, you know, learning it through each other has been kind of great. And definitely we would talk about like if the shame in our language and that, you know, that we want to be removing it because we, even if we're all at different stages of getting to that journey of being proud Indigenous women, that is a goal for ourselves. So we have to be making sure that we're using prideful language when we're talking about where we come from and our Inukness, because that's that is how we feel, and that's how we want to feel. And so that was kind of an interesting conversations for us to have, and then an interesting journey for Micah, the character, to go through to kind of feel like that this place she's from is worthy of defending, and that she and her friends are also kind of uniquely capable of taking this on. But I also think it's interesting, like in the context of the Green Knight, that there's different, like with the character of Lena, who just decides kind of she's rather stay back and not fight and take care of the kids. You know, that the reality is there are some people that are kind of more the alien fighting type. and there are also some who are fine staying at home, and that's fine too. And that they'd rather take care of the kids and that sort of thing. And that's also important. Mm-hmm. As we're sharing the movie, it just like makes me a puddle when they talk about how proud they are of being able to share with audiences where they come from and share their culture. And when we were at South by Southwest in Texas, Chelsea had made her own beaded jewelry and was asking.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, and she asked to speak to if she could introduce the movie and speak to the audience in Inuktitut, which of course nobody understands, but it's just so amazing to be able to share these words and this language that they might have been really kind of ashamed of before.
She can come on and do this whole podcast and I'll just keep asking questions and she can answer them however she wants. I'll be like, great, this episode's just not for me, and that's totally fine.
Yeah, it's so great. And so to see these young people kind of grow up with the movie as well has been so fantastic. And when it comes to kids, and I worry a lot about, you know, the pressures of kids on set and not wanting to, I strongly believe that kids shouldn't feel like they're working or be having to like think about work because they're kids. But, you know, it was so fun for us to work together, and we still love hanging out together. And that's something that is so, so great. But it's also so funny because the girls were saying to me last week, like, oh, we wish you could just make the movie again because we'd be so much better this time.
You're like, that's the thing about making movies, though, guys. We make new ones.
Yeah, you just can get better, take the lessons you've learned and like be grateful for the experience. And I think that's also the other thing is, you know, not being too precious about things like that. And actually, in the context of the Green Knight and everything, it's like these kind of pressures that we feel a lot of the times are actually just external.
Right.
And it's actually more about the journey than the celebrating the telling of the stories.
Right. That was something I had to like calibrate to when I was watching the Green Knight was. We like the way it was advertised too, certainly was like it, you know, this epic hero's journey, and like the teaser was like a head bursting into flames, and like that is certainly a thing we do see in the Green Knight, but it is not descriptive of the tone or the speed of the Green Knight. And I like what you said about there not being like one definition of heroism. And like Lena, when she's telling, like, they're like, all right, we're gonna go kill aliens now. Like, come on, Lena. And she's like, no. And you're like expecting her to kind of turn it around and find that inner fire. And she's like, I don't do cool stuff like you guys do. I never will. And like, I wish I did, but I don't. And I am going to sit here on my phone. And, but like the little kids did need looking after, and they did need someone there with them. And it's nice getting to see, you know, each of them get to do like, and, you know, one of your girls in the movie, she's like a warrior. She's out there. She wants to tell the news. She wants to tell everyone that she killed the most aliens. And like, so it was, like, watching the Green Knight was really a sort of instruction and patience for me of being like, oh, it doesn't have to be the Northman's version of tramping through the landscape and literally stabbing people through open holes in their face. Like, it can be a contemplative, different experience with a very flawed character who's trying to find out, who's, like, trying to sort through the entire time. He's like, am I just a piece of shit? Or, like, do I have something to offer here?
Yeah, and that's actually, like, another big thing about what I related to is like just really that process. And I think like where I kind of feel or for myself and where I've landed that feels kind of comfortable is that, yeah, I'm a bit of a garbage human piece of shit, but I've got these like redeeming qualities and it's okay. You know? And that we're all kind of flawed. And this idea that like striving for perfection is crazy making. Mm-hmm.
I like that your knight's tale is like, am I this guy who's just going to wake up in the brothel and like go to court and sit next to my cool uncle King Arthur? Like, you're like, is that my noble knight? I'm not Galahad.
Where have you been?
Mass.
You? At mass?
Yeah.
All night?
Yes.
Well, where are your boots?
What?
Where are you?
Yeah, but I also think that that's also another thing about, like, you know, being an Indigenous filmmaker, there is this a bit of an added pressure I know that one of the reasons why people are responding to this movie is that they just haven't seen a movie that's been a movie that's like an alien invasion movie that's been set up in the Arctic. That's yeah. And they haven't seen like a contemporary movie by an Inuk director. So there is this kind of it's great that for those reasons it's getting this support and people are really responding to it. And but then at the same time, I'm kind of like, oh yeah, but I'm just like kind of a mediocre person just trying to do my best. And and it's like, and that, and so for me, kind of being okay with that has been a bit of a process, and that it's like, oh yeah, this is part of the journey is also having these moments of sitting in a bit of embarrassment and being like, oh, okay, that wasn't exactly how I thought that would turn out. But there's still some cool stuff that's there, and there's some growth that's happening in the moments of discomfort. And actually, I think that's true, that is how you grow, is you kind of throw yourself into situations where you're not quite prepared, or even just I think of traveling alone, and you know, it's like you kind of are growing and through these moments of tension. And that's what I actually love kind of explore. And me and my co-writer, we sit and we talk about these kinds of things all the time, because that is essentially what is at the root of horror in trying to figure out, is these moments of tension and processing fear and violence and stuff. And I think violence can be a lot of things. Like a breakup can be violent, emotionally violent, and cause that kind of time of growth. But there's physical violence, of course, even just, and we all are witness to it all the time. Like there's times where I'm just feeling a little more vulnerable and I'll see someone, I saw someone just get injured on a bike, just like their cheek got injured on a bike, but I saw the blood on the sidewalk, and it like made me feel unsettled all day. Like I was just like, like, oh, we're all so fragile, and like, you know, and I think because of where I was at the time emotionally, that's just how I was responding. But then going and then sitting and thinking about these violence or fear, and then how we kind of process it, and then hopefully in a healthy way and not in a way that will drive me crazy.
Well, it's little points. You feel the sort of glancing blows of the violence that these kids experience sort of on a day-to-day basis from like that shitty cop. And my specific question here will be to ask you about the arming up montage that you do, because I've always wanted I don't care if it's a rom-com, I want an arming up montage with your makeup and with your lipstick and your boy brow and everything. Give me an arming up montage. But like when they're arming up, they're suiting up to go fight the aliens, like Micah puts on the like No Justice on Stolen Land leather jacket, and she's gonna go out there and she's gonna kick the ass of the invaders who have arrived at her land. And so these, and immediately like this, it's an action horror kind of situation, but immediately one of the little girls is like, you don't fuck with women from Pang. And like, these girls are already prepared. They're prepared to fucking defend themselves. And they literally put on like painted adornments on their faces to like go to war. These kids are ready to do battle as children. And I believed them. I believed them.
Thanks. Yeah, that was really fun to film with the girls. And they are such a spunky bunch. and, you know, it is really funny because, like, they are hunters, some of them. Like, Alexis, when we went to South by Southwest, she had these crazy stripes on her face from frostbite because she'd gone polar bear tracking the week before or something. And when we were going to be doing press a couple of weeks ago, Chelsea asked to, like, switch days because she was going caribou hunting. And so that kind of stuff was really, really fun. Section 35 is the company, the clothing company, indigenous owned, that designed the jacket. Mm-hmm. A lot of indigenous designers kind of contributed. Carly Gallant was the beater of the hat. So that was just kind of a fun kind of thing. And then the tattooing, of course, was really special. That's something that within Canada's history with Indigenous people, there was what's known as the residential school system, and Indigenous people were taken from their families and put in schools that Ooh. Where they were essentially taught or punished for speaking their language and practicing mm-hmm. their culture. And a lot of these things were rebranded as devil worship, essentially. And so that's, you know, my father's generation, my aunties, and my cast, it would be their grandparents' generation. And so this kind of recently, this reclamation of Inuit tattoos has happened. And so when we asked the girls what their traditional tattoos would be for this scene, they mm-hmm. all had idea. They already knew, like, they'd all thought about, oh, when I'm older, if I get the tattoos, these are the ones that I would get. So they were all designs personal to the girls that they had already thought about, which I thought was so great that they already had these ideas. And this is something that is really kind of popular up in the Arctic, is these face tattoos. And it's kind mm-hmm. of this obvious and visible representation of pride in your Inukness. And so I thought that was a little fun thing for the scene.
That's really beautiful. It's like, cause I was like, there's a significance here clearly, but for it to be specifically aligned with each of them and things that they had thought about, what a wonderful, like, intimate detail that they get to bring that nobody else could. Like, each of the things that they chose in that moment had to belong to them. It couldn't belong to anybody else. And that's really, really nice. I don't normally end on, like, kind of random questions, but I just wanted to hear you talk about the excellent soundtrack in this movie. This is fucking bangers. I was like, I'm streaming this. I assumed you were involved in it.
Yeah, we've got to figure out a way to stream, get this music streamable.
So good.
Nobody fucks with the girls from Pang.
Yeah, so some of my good friends are in an electronic DJ group called Hallucination, formerly A Tribe Called Red. And they do these incredible kind of electronic dance music, but built on powwow beats, and they kind of came on before the script was written, and they were like, yeah, we'd work together before and we're friends. And so they kind of, and Bear, who's one of the lead DJs, is, though they're both nerds, but Bear in particular is such a nerd. And like, he has like two of every action figure because he has to one to play
you have
with
to have a boxed one and play with one.
Yeah, yeah. Truly. So it's so he was like into the idea of making music for this, and I was just blown over by the idea of them making music for it. So that was awesome. And then we also had this amazing composer in LA, Michael Brooks, who's actually a Canadian as well. He just lives down there. And he's so amazing. His music's so beautiful. And so he would take music that the tribe guys would make and then adapt that, make his own stems and send it back. And so it was such a great collaboration. And then Tanya Tagok, this amazing throat singer and musician.
I wanted to ask specifically about her because she gets a special credit. It's like vocal performance, like done by. She's in like with like the cast and the name talent as it rolls up in the opening scroll. She's mentioned.
She also came on very early and she provided just so many vocalizations for the creatures. Wow. And so when you hear whenever there's like a creature that's about to arrive, you hear her. The hallucination guys actually took her vocals and then like played them backwards. So wow. That it's like this weird kind of just sounds totally inhuman, but it really works for the creatures. And so she really loved the idea of being like the queen of the aliens. So.
Well, this movie, I mean, it sounds phenomenal in those ways. And so I'm really, I know we have come to the end of our time, but I'm really glad I got to squeeze that in at the end in there because that is such a standout part of this movie. But Nyla, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today and discuss this. It's like, it's a movie that I want to watch. I want to watch it like back to back with Turbo Kid.
Yeah.
And have like a Canadian adventure double feature night. And I hope that is how up in Canada you refer to us as that the people who live down there. Like he's Canadian, but he lives down there. So I hope that's true. But thank you. And good luck on rolling this out and congratulations on it coming out. You did it. You got this quest in the bag.
Quest complete.
Sincerely, thank you. This has been so much fun to talk to you about this, Nyla. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you again to Nyla Inukshuk. As of this past weekend, Slashback is playing in select theaters, and it's available on demand pretty much anywhere you might want to look. It's really charming. It's a really fun time. Just the sincerity and newness radiating off these actors she cast out of their own hometown is so endearing, and I hope you check it out. I hope you go on Nyla's quest with her and get down to that rad-ass soundtrack she has. My God. And now, though, I have one quick thing before I go, and I would like to acknowledge the life and recent death of Canadian native filmmaker Jeff Barnaby. He was somebody who I really, really hoped I would get an interview on this show. There was sort of an opportunity fairly recently where it looked like he might even be a possibility. And of course, if it couldn't be then, I thought like, well, you know, surely the next time he puts something out, I would love to speak with him again. I got the chance to interview him when I was at Vulture for the release of his movie Blood Quantum about a reservation in Canada that becomes an insulated enclave when there is a zombie outbreak and the native population is immune to the contagion as their reservation is besieged by seething and blood-soaked white zombies. It's really good. It features a cherished actor, friend of the pod, Michael Grey Eyes. I would listen to the wonderful and thoughtful conversation he had with me if you get a chance in our little back catalog. But Jeff Barnaby was one of the best interviews I've ever had. He spoke with such clarity and such passion and such conviction about the ferocity necessary to make art as a native creator when there is so little institutional support. He was uncompromising in how he talked about sort of the tokenization of diversity at an institutional level, where instead of like, you know, fully handing Native people specifically the reins to make their own things, oftentimes it comes down to like hiring consultants instead, therefore giving yourself the pat on the back cosign of having brought a Native creator into the filmmaking or TV making process and then being like, we did our good work for the day, even though a bunch of white folks are still the ones who controlled every aspect of this, but we got our rubber stamp, you know, from the person who we needed to give it to us. There was such candor and such kindness in the way that he talked. And I was so excited coming out of that interview because it was one of those rare occasions where you felt like somebody said only things to you that were entirely real and that they would have said them whether you were recording or not. And that the important thing to him was to just deliver his movies honestly to the world on his own terms And there have actually been a couple people now where we maybe even almost interviewed them, or we thought we were going to, that have since passed away. And Jeff Barnaby was only 46. And I am sad in like that tiny way personally, you know, of course, compared to the larger sense of it, that I didn't get to speak to him again. I'm sad that there will be no more Jeff Barnaby movies for all of us. And I'm sad there's no more Jeff Barnaby, because it would have been great to have him out and talking and thinking and making in the world for a lot longer. So I hope, in celebration of Jeff Barnaby, I recommend this weekend you queue up a Canadian horror double feature. Put on Slashback, put on Blood Quantum, and what you're going to have is just a really good fucking time watching independent films. So yeah, this one goes out to Jeff Barnaby, a talented man and somebody who should have got to make a lot more stuff. So go support independent cinema, as we say, and also support the memory of somebody who made some really good stuff while they were here. It's really hard to make any one thing. And he managed to make it happen a couple of times, as I said, with like just absolutely no institutional support. So Rhymes for Young Ghouls, Blood Quantum, get out there, check them out. But yes, that is us. That's the show. You can follow along on Twitter at FeelingScenePod, or you can send us an email at feelingscene@maximumfun.org. If you want to follow me, I'm JorCrew on Twitter. Our theme music is by Andrew Epen. This show is produced by Marissa Flaxbart. Our senior producers are Kevin Ferguson and Laura Swisher, and this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.